all of us that came in on and that had a family, maybe had a house way up in North California and had little time to spend. We had many officers' wives there for quite a time through the whole war, I think, if the men were on ships that came in regularly. And all people like that. Well, when the war was over, it gradually changed over. We kept general lending. We kept it on a monthly basis, and we didn't run the hotel part anymore because we needed too many employees, and it was too uncertain and all that. It was easier to run it that way, and I had then, after that bad manager I had that I threw out after the OPA, I had another manager. They were, he was a friend of my husband on the beach. He had been hurt in an industrial accident and couldn't work full time anymore. Pete Jensen. He talked with my husband, and my husband, he was from Swedish ancestry, and my husband's mother was a Swede, so there was a common bond, and I didn't want to take him because his wife wasn't suitable for the job. And I didn't trust him either, and if I took him, then they would be hard to get rid of, and they're friends of my husband. But he insisted. He's a good worker, and they're honest. Honest they were, especially his wife. But she was an incessant smoker. She never went to bed. One night she said there was a little light smoke day and night. And I know it would not, a woman can, who keep books and do all that needs to be done in a business like that and get her health down like that. And with it she drank coffee. She not drank any alcohol, but she didn't eat right. And Pete, he tended to the lobster at night. In the evening, the owners of the parking lot went home, and he took over and collected. And that temptation was stupid for him. In time, he took to alcohol, because Myrtle was his wife's name. They were with us 10 years, had a stroke, and she was about 2 years in a convalescent home. There were people that lived every cent up, you know, so there was no money, so she had to be in this convalescent home, and when she was gone, the spending got worse. And she didn't want to see him anymore, and he didn't go anymore because he drank so much that he smelled from alcohol so badly. I felt so sorry for that woman, if it wasn't for some tenants that needed to keep going to her till she died. She would have had no one. They had no children. So after Mother was dead and gone, he kept him a little while, and I hired a woman to do Mother's job, and he did the reporting. But he got worse and worse. I had to write to his brother to Idaho to come and get him, because it's impossible to keep him even in the apartment. He'd be so drunk and smoked all the time, too. He could set the house on fire, and he got to get the medicine. They came and they put him in the home. That was the end of Myrtle. And they were so fortunate. Some of the old tenants in our house died that liked them or liked her and left them all their money in the thousands. They were so lucky that way. They could have had such a nice mistake and a nice life if it wasn't for that. Her living just on cigarettes. She died then with another bad stroke after 2 years. And he went to his brother. Then he did get. I hired them again. This woman got some relatives to move in who was a good mechanic, but that didn't work out long because she was there half a year. Then I got another party that didn't work out for long until I got the mowing. I advertised, and they were one couple that, you know, I had about five couples then in advance to that, and they seemed very nice, and they were. They were by far the best managers I ever had. He was a 1A mechanical man. He could fix anything, and he wouldn't push it out and had got people waiting to do it right now. It was one of those times. And when it became certain that the law would be torn down, I just didn't want to have somebody strange again. And the neighborhood had gotten so bad. So they just, they announced that I made that arrangement. Which now they're still my friends and help me if I need anything. Board abroad or something, that's still friends. So that's the story of the law. Lots of good memories from there. But a lot of course, they were mostly after the war again, older people. They came back to remember the law. Some of those farmers then retired. If they retired and came to Long Beach Village without a Lyle, and if he had something, we had many old people that died there. But I kept the book. Nobody else could but me with their doctor, their son, their place where the call, where the event was, and I kept the record on all of them. And the couple by the name of Johnson, he died first. He died one night in the bathtub with his stroke. And she died a few years later. They were in there from when they retired and gave their farms to other people that lived in the lot, and there were quite a few like that that you got to know personally. And they felt good because they knew I would know what doctor to call, what daughter to call, and it kept kind of a thing like that going for them. And so people get old, they don't like to move anyhow. Half of them were people that were in there the last 15 years of their lives, and some of them even longer. Of course, good thing, because after a while, in all those years, we couldn't raise that rent, and we couldn't keep the place up to snuff. I said, do have that here. We do what we can and what has to be done, but nothing above that, because they're going to tear the building down. We would have done lots of things to it, you know, to keep it. But when you know a building is going to be torn down, you don't want to put that in. And so we let that go back to the tenants. They paid the very highest rent. They paid for a double, that is a bedroom with it, and kitchen and bath, and the front room, $65. No utilities to pay, nothing. That was cheap rent. Okay. And without a bedroom, they were 40. And so nobody much moved, because we always kept it clean. Everybody, knew that. I had a company to clean every month a couple of times, so no bucks would be there. And we had all the repair necessary done, so nothing leaked, and the plumbing and all that. So just that we didn't renew the furniture or do big paint jobs. So it worked out all right. And the city, of course, they were anxious to buy it on account of the inflation. If they'd have waited those 2 years that they let it stand there empty, I would have gotten a bigger price. Never got it. So they realized that. And they see that and know more what's coming than we do. So it was just all right. I'm all right. Yeah. Can't be the grunt. Let me think what I've got.
Around the Lyle,
the whole neighborhood, just a block north and another block west, the whole town stayed the same. There's still those old buildings between Broadway and Third on Chestnut, up to Fifth, take it to the west from over to Daisy. It's all the same. It's just that complex of Civic Center and then those business insurance buildings along Ocean Avenue.
On the south side of Ocean,
a complex of high-rise buildings there where lawyers and airplane flight companies and big businesses have their business. But otherwise, even south of Pacific and south of Ocean on Pacific, there were still the old parts of the pipes that are going. That's still the same. That old swimming pool is down there and everything. And bowling alleys and what have you. It used to be such a nice place to go to. When we had around the ocean, that walk, you know, that mile,
Rainbow
Pier, and everything settled around there. That the music, the city band would play down there in the afternoon. Right by, down by Pine Avenue, that section. There was to the left of Pine, where that big building is, it's a museum. Down there were benches, and they had lattice work on top where people could sit, and there was a small bowl for the
band shell,
yeah. And every band was music down there. They didn't then go so much out to Bixby Park, and that's where they go now. The whole social life kind of was down there, because there was that old dance hall that all our tenants went to. An old-fashioned dance hall. What was it called? Oh, I can't say the name now. I'm having some time. They got ready every weekend to go to those dances, and a couple of times in the evening. Oh, what's that dance hall? Right down from Pine, on the pipe. I always knew when it was 2 o'clock, but when they all came back and woke me up, 2 o'clock at night, and sometimes those old guys bring their boyfriends along, and they'd have a party at home. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, loud and singing and dancing. One girl said to me one morning at 9 o'clock, and she cried. We lived in the Lyle, and I washed early in the morning so I wouldn't be in anybody's way. And I hung my wash up along her windows there early in the morning, and my tears coming down there. It was terrible, Mrs. Berger. If you always pass so early, and I go to bed late and I can't sleep at night, and then here you wake me up. I said, yes, but you know, at 4 o'clock this morning I haven't slept yet because of your party. When you come home from dancing, you bring people along. I hate to tell you how many nights you have kept me awake. Not 9 o'clock in the morning at night. And she was quiet. You know, they have the old people, they want some amusement, and the Longbridge is good for that. They had so many spots where they could go. The Bixby Park had all their state picnics and lectures, and they had lots of fun in Long Beach that way before the war. And even some after it, they used to too for political things, you know. Eleanor Roosevelt spoke there once, and then Bixby Park.
Really?
Yes, oh yes. I saw quite a few personalities because they came to speak, especially before election. I never forget, and Eleanor Roosevelt was there to speak. She had this kind of leftish woman from Hollywood that ran for something. She was quite a politician.
Oh, Helen Hagen.
Good, yes. That was her friend. She was with us on that day. And other personalities that were in the National Front, which come to Long Beach because they found clustered up a lot of voters. No, Long Beach has really good names. In fact, lots of people like it better than Los Angeles. Well, you know, the ocean and all. They could go to Catalina, and there was so much to do for them, and they met their same friends. So, got a situation, you know, later on where they maybe would have gotten married yet, but then they lost the pension. So what they did is just run the apartment next to each other and both kept the pension, kept them going. So
what else I want to hear what else the old people who lived in the Lyle did for amusement.
Well, that's what they did. They went out to these dances every so often. They even got Pete to go once with them down there, and then they was old dancers, Mrs. Berger, and my husband danced. Mama, my husband didn't dance. I wouldn't go again because we had men living there who didn't want to dance with me. They were dancing there, women's friends. And it was funny, even down in dance hall, a lot of people stuck together, and then they ended up, and when they went home, they ended up in someone's apartment and made a pot of coffee and talked about home and sang songs. They had good old times. In an innocent way, those days, people didn't drink like they do nowadays. It was just that they're coffee and they're soft. And, but then, it was like one big family sometimes. A few men, single men that worked in the shipyard, stayed there too after it was over, made it their home. And they are old when they had a new class. You didn't think there was a nicer building in Long Beach than the Lyle. That was the only place in Lyle they lived there. They did lots of cooking too, you know. Can't ever satisfy everybody. But as a whole, we had a pretty nice class of people, and they were happy there. Well, the Lyle is our home. They would say, now they're going to tear it down. But there were, we weren't alone. There were some more. You know, eventually even this big one on the alley there on Broadway came down.
Meet Omar Hubbard?
Omar Hubbard, yes. Lots of our friends had to get out of there, too. Yeah. It changed an awful lot when that December took shape. You know, it came up, it changed an awful lot of life. I think Buffum's and all those stores must have had a hard time, you know, with the city changing the way it is, so many people moving out and so many shopping centers all around. That's why I mentioned they changed. And look at that lovely store on First Street there, on Locust. It was there for years and years, and out of business too. On the one corner was Barker Brothers, on the other corner, Broadway there and Locust was, it was a big business. It was half of it was for men clothing, and the other half for women. Oh, and I remember in olden times, and Bernstein's was there. Was there was a drugstore on Bernstein's on the corner with their old good Jewish sandwiches and sauerkraut, and you could have any kind of meal downtown in Long Beach for 50 cents. Oh, and good stuff today. After a while, they started the restaurant, then over on Pacific by the park. And finally, they went down the shore, still a restaurant by that name, their children there. That same family. There were lots of business people downtown that made a living out of Long Beach, out of the tourist trade. Texas, you know, the nicest thing in Long Beach was the Pike, too. They went a lot to the Pike. There'd be shows, like shows, and galleries and everything, too expensive. And I went down to Long Beach when I first came to California because that was the place to go. A friend of mine and I, for the week, to take a vacation. And we would go down to the Pike and do what all the rest of the people did. And then we went home. I'd get ready to lift up on 7th Street or something. That bus driver would say, no, I can't go, there's so-and-so is missing. He would invite us on it, and he'd go up to the very stupid entrance and let them all off, and good night, Mary, good night, Jack, and they all knew. I thought, my gosh, what a town. What a town. And now how cosmopolitan it is. Nobody except the big shacks, you still know them. But otherwise, it's just like every other big city.
So you think the big department stores and things in Long Beach suffered like during the 1950s?
Oh, later, now, look at the Broadway, the Buffum Square across the street, everything going down. The fish market is yet one corner that's still going. But so many others, the German Dog's business is the business that's called the Hans Towers there for years. Then the Iron Man was next to them, they're all gone. That whole complex is coming down soon. I really like to see Long Beach and I'm
used to that. Why do you think they didn't do something to you know, redevelop it before it got to this point?
Well, first of all, nobody knew where that city, everybody knew the city center is coming. And for a long time, nobody knew where it would be exactly. And business always goes where the center is. For a while, I was in the sessions and they discussed discuss putting it north, up near 23rd and those blocks. They had a siding in mind. But everybody was so against it. It should be downtown. On account of the public buildings, you know, the gas, water company and all that, it should all be in one complex. So it finally worked out that that was the site. And it took all the years to plan it, and then the more years to do it, and it isn't finished yet. My husband always said, I just don't want to die before our men get on the moon. Then he said, when he lived, then he said, with Delilah, I don't want to die till that's settled. I don't want to. You to have the whole thing all alone, because my son is not a businessman. One time I took him along to the discussion, he helped the city. He said, oh, mother, why don't you have it so many years and have the income? Why don't you take that? And the city would call up somebody, you know, that had this under him. Said, why don't bring your son along? I said, my son is up north, you can't take off all the time. Yeah, I wasn't going to leave him. He said, he's not money mind, not business, he's a scientific mind. I said, oh, now I wonder what he's going to do selling his own property. I told my grandson, he's more like me. He said, son, you better go in there with your dad when he does that selling. He'll give it away. If a person will tell him a hard look story, he'll sell it for half price. Money doesn't affect him at all. You see, cold. Well, there are people like that, you know. Some of the people couldn't get so very rich if they weren't the other half that's different.
Yeah.
You know how that works. Well, with the city, I sure had a battle there, but I had a good law firm that I had Constance and his father and two sons. They're still in business. And they said to me, when they come and they make an offer to you, then you don't accept it. You come to us. We take it from there. And I said, and what is your retainer? They said, 33.5%. Well, what's going to be paid? But I get above the offer. Well, they offered me so little that I thought, I want at least $100,000 more than they offered. And I thought, I figured out what they would get if I picked them in on it already. So I never went near them until I had my price. Then I said, now if you can get it up higher, I could only raise it about 9,000 from where I had. So that was a lot better than, because there was a lot of tax I had to pay. And I paid them alone $9,000. And there was at least 30,000 that went by in Texas and stuff.
Who were the lawyers?
Ah, I don't want that.
Okay.
See, I don't know if I'm allowed, if I can give things out like that and tell them the Irish people. Irish people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. No,
why do you think, though, that the people like the people that ran Brussels and had their delicatessen that you talked about and all that, why didn't they do something about downtown before it got to the point that it is now?
Well, what can one firm do? One house. The Dutchman, we call him the Dutchman, it's a German delicatessen. He had a gold mine. He educated all his children, and he had a gold mine there. Well, he had in his pocket what he wanted out of that place and sold it. And the next woman, they were Hungarians. She tried to do the same, but then her husband died and she had three children. Now a young outfit has it and has made a little sandwich place out of it. They don't bother at all about getting the old known merchandise in. You could order any roast, any cut, German or English with him, and he'd get it. And certain sausages and certain things and liqueurs and things that were important. For instance, rare spices. They dropped all that. Buffums, I understand the old family that started the store is not in it at all anymore. I imagine those people get old too and die off. And times change, and I forget who the companies that bought for them. You always hear foreigners, but you don't know directly who it is. If they walk us, it's not in the Walker family anymore either.
No, I think it's closed.
Is it closed now? Oh, well, then they're working on this. I wonder if they're making a mall there. You know how many malls we have. You know, all the people come from the spy and all those things. Banks and shopping centers. You think they're going to live on money. Eat that in a little while. Yeah, the fields disappear. You know, most of the fields go into money competition. Either building condominiums or another shopping center. It's not the right balance, I don't think. It's gone, it's shed, it's well off. Most of the people are working, but what will it be to? I don't know either.
Okay.
While I was running these apartment houses, I kept going to the Saints of Mind Church that I had started early in my life in Los Angeles. And mostly those churches were so far, they were not always in a church, they were in a theater or some other big building. But I had to travel so far to get to them. So I found in Highland Park a Unity Center, and that's on the same spiritual basis. They are all collected under this metaphysical movement that belongs to that, rather than to the fundamentalist churches. And that appealed to me more, so I stuck with Unity then. And when I got married, my husband was not a churchgoer. He was also born a Lutheran like I, but he had to be able to count everything and see everything. He couldn't take anything by faith. And if I told him, they don't mean that at all. That has a different spiritual meaning. Why don't they say so, he would say in the Bible, you know. Why don't they say so? I don't can't see that at all, what you're talking about. So he never went to church with me, but he had that much faith that he thought it was doing me good, it was doing us good. I was pretty successful in everything I did, and I seemed to him like an honest person, so he thought it couldn't hurt me. So on a Sunday he would say, you go off to church. I watch the chicken or I watch the dinner. And that's the way we live. He never helped me, stopped me or talked against me. In fact, when there were any problems coming up or any thing that needed special attention, he would say to me, Mom, you go and do your stuff. That meant I should pray about it. And then he had complete confidence. Come on, usually did. We had a house out in Sunland one time we bought because the doctor said my husband should be in a climate of dry air with his bronchitis. So we went out there one day looking for a house, and that very same day he fell in love with that house we bought. It was the nicest corner, but we couldn't stay because while we were out there, we were being robbed by the manager we had that was doing all that stealing. And my linen closet down the basement that was locked and all was getting empty. Just all the linen disappeared. I had bought $1,000 worth of linen. Got less and less. And then I found out about him taking percentage, and I said to my husband, he can't stay here. He can't stay here, and I couldn't tell him quite the truth because he would go after him. I said, waiting for talking like they want to leave. So we had that lovely house. It was the nicest house we ever had. A year, and a nice garden and an empty lot next to it. and we sold it, and we had paid. See, this was about 48 or so, when a dollar was still a dollar. We had paid $18,000 for it, so, and it's out in the country, it was a nice house. So, a real estate lady in the neighborhood heard that we were going to sell, and she came around all the time wanting it for $16,000, and my husband said, take it, you never get repaid too much for it. Take it. I said, no, we're not going to take it. Let me alone. I'm going to try and wait on it. And so finally it didn't go, and it didn't go. And I said to him, I wrote to Unity about it. Forget about it. You'll get your $18,000 and more. And I could quiet them down another week. Well, before that week was up, someone came, a friend called me that these people were coming. They were supposed to move into a prior apartment. And they were just like, we were that place. You couldn't help it. You just loved it. It had a big seat. The living room rug was 50 by 50. We had wide doors out into the garden. We had a sun deck. We had an extra wash house. And a nice patio, beautiful patio. And we had three bedrooms for company guests and two. And it was fairly new all. And so these people came, and the woman said, don't say anything. Let him look and don't influence him. If he likes it, he'll buy it. And he is a businessman from Santa Monica. And so I did. And I said to my husband, you know, there's such a nice organ down in the park. I wanted to get him out of the way because he was put in and talking and praising him. So yes, so he didn't know what was coming in. So he said, I think I'll go. And he went, and they came, and I, when they went, looked in the house, I sat out in the garden. When they went in the garden on the outside, I went inside, never said a word. And finally they called me. They want to talk to me. So we sat down, and he said, well, Mrs. Berger, $18,500, that's what I have given them. It's too much. I don't want to pay that. We like it, and I like to have it, but that's too much money. I could get $17,000 for it. And I said, oh, I don't know. I have to think about it, and I didn't know how to run. And I said, what about the furnishings? If you bought that rug, you'd have to pay all kinds of money and all the furnishings, and we don't want to pay anything but our bedroom. And it had an electric stove and everything, beautiful kitchen. Well, he says, I'll give you $1,500 for that. So we had our $18,500. I got the rug with the house when I bought it, you see. And he wrote me a check, and they wanted to get in it pretty quickly. When my husband came home from his ball game, I was fucked up, he said. And I showed him the down payment check and the whole thing. He couldn't believe it. So you see, he thought there was something to my money called my humbug. Because I could, in fact, all the things we bought and sold, they were easy, and I always came out good. Well, of course, the times were that way, too. We couldn't go down there at all in those times. So we moved back in a hurry to the Lyle again and stayed there. We didn't go away again. Took one of the apartments, and he didn't like that at all. Do nothing about it. Until then, pretty soon the OPA went off, and that's Easter. So my husband was a good man, honest man, doing living in every way, but he said he couldn't go for my fantasy, which meant religion. But we had a nice life, and he said he didn't have to pray. He never did anything wrong. I said, you're the first angel I ever met. It was a lot of fun.
You went to Unity Church in Highland Park?
Yes, and then in Long Beach, Dr. Newman had a little church on Broadway, Unity Church. I went there. When she died, I went back over to the Eval Club. That's where the Religious Science Church was. And for the rest of the time, I went there. And in Lisa Ward, again, there was no chance of months. I went back to the university. I was stuck with her. I need something. Some people may not, but I do.
What's the difference between you and me?
They're all, you see, metaphysical. That means they believe in God, in a being, spiritual being. But they don't believe in God as a man. It's just behind the clouds and leaves us off. It's the difference. You see, the Lutheran Church goes strictly by the Bible and what the Bible says. Well, we do too, but there are many meanings to those things. You can take it in many different ways. And to me, the metaphysical way is more plausible, more, I can take it better. I've got to be able to know it in my mind before I can believe it. Now, some people are better off. They can take the things strictly by faith, whether it makes sense to them or not. They can believe it. Well, I don't happen to be that fortunate. I've got to be able to reason it out. That's the difference, mainly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give an example of a difference between either between Lutherans and metaphysical, or between?
I can only say that's only methods, philosophies of men that pick out their Lutheran way or their Baptist way or their Methodist way. It's only the mechanics of religion. It's not really deep inside. There can't be nothing else but one God, one supreme being. But these are all different ways to get to it. And some people, you cannot talk in a metaphysical way because they've been brought up on the fundamentalist way and they want to believe it that way. It's nothing to them that you can use here, where unity is, it's not a denomination, it's a school of practical Christianity. You're supposed to use it in your life, in your everyday living and believing and talking, and that most people separate religion and God from what you do here. So many things we get so guilt-ridden about are not bad at all. They're necessary to happen. But if you were taught that it was a death sin to say hell or to say a bad word, you go to hell for it. Well, you just can't get yourself away from it. Now, we, in the metaphysical field, we don't say that's a good word, or that's the word to use, or we wouldn't want to use it, but we don't think it's the best thing to use it. And the same thing, well, lots of people compulsive have to do wrong things, and can't get away from it. And then they have been taught that they're absolutely no good, and they're doomed, and they believe that. Our thoughts and our beliefs have an awful lot to do with what materializes. You know so many people, for instance, that can't think anything else but that they're poor, and they're unlucky, and they're this and that and the other, and they feed their subconscious mind with all that. And so they're wishing, they're aiming from deep down is that way. And naturally stamps out here. If you say to yourself, well, I would like a wealthy dress, but it's awful expensive. And can I do it? And you think about it. And at the same time, you see yourself in that velvet dress, and you're so skippy and you're admired. Your mind and your desire goes to work on that velvet dress, and all of a sudden you have one. It comes somehow. And that's how I came back to America. Against all obstacles, I still count that a miracle that I got back here without having the citizenship, without money, and having a little baby. And I made it. If I didn't believe 100% that America was my country and that by hell and high water I'm going to be here, I wouldn't submit it. The minute you start doubting and disbelieving in yourself, it's no good. Well, same with God. If you have to have a God that you doubt and that you have to think, oh, that's not possible, can't be, and so on. Then the relationship isn't real. Isn't real and doesn't do nothing for you. On the other hand, we learn and we know that we can run to this deity and pray for this and that and then sit down and do nothing. What's done for us is done through us. And this new religion. And like Dr. Holmes says, it's the last word. Science and philosophy and all that goes on and finds new angles and finds new, for instance, since we've been on the moon, there's a lot of stories nobody believes anymore. Because they've been there and saw it. No matter what the Bible would say to a scientific-minded person about the Bible, since they know what is there and what it consists of, they don't have to believe it. There was one fellow there that left the Unity magazine upstairs. One of the first ones to end up, I can't tell you his name right now. One of the ones that walked on the moon. And he said, he lectures sometimes in these churches too. And he said that he didn't believe it. He would have never walked on there, but he believed it was possible. You see? Didn't that tell us that if you believe wrong, if you believe wrong, it's wrong what comes out of it. But you sit down and say, Luther or John the Baptist were the only men that knew it and that it stopped there at what they saw. That's wrong too. You're free. And our psychic being is much more capable to help us along than our material experiences. A certain knowing. I just hard to express, but I don't know what would have happened to me and my boy if I didn't catch on that rainy day, that whiff of something that gave me hope and made me study it. I have to tell you someday a little story of a little book that was the very beginning of my, what the people call, lucky. Oh, you're just lucky. And they talk about my health. Oh, you're just lucky. And so now they say, oh, I never expected you to end up in a home. I said, I know there's a last roundup for my life on earth. How do you know whether that isn't the right thing for me? Nobody knows but myself. Myself and my feeling. Others can only judge. So, I don't call this calamity. I'm very thankful there are places like that. And more thankful that I have to do with what it takes to make it possible. Don't you know, Kay, I wish I'd have known that when I was as young as you. It's not at all what happens to you in life. Not at all. It's much more important how you react to it. How you react to it. If you let it pull you down and never get up anymore, then you don't. It takes our part. That's why the Bible, when it says of a deity of three parts, you know, good God, and then God, the Father, then the Spirit, and then the Son, the man, that's the living. And our living here on this earth is supposed to come out of the other two parts, but never without. How would we know anything if we didn't live it? Go through all this agony and joy and bliss and hunger and thirst and too much and too little. How could anything good out of it if we didn't react to it? Well, I mustn't get into a religious philosophic talk here.
Why not?
Yes. A lot of people wouldn't understand it. I wouldn't want
to explain it so people can understand. I think you did a good job.
Did I do a good job?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, good, because that's the biggest part of our life. You know, when I was so poor,
I told you once before that there was nothing in my world but a 12-year-old hungry boy and me hungry and the depression and $25. That looked bleak, but to me it never did, because there's some hope alive in me.